Today we're going to be talking about Reb Pinchas Karetzach. The reason that we're going to be talking about it is because last time
you said you were.
I said I was going to do it, and in retrospect that wasn't the ideal choice, because there is not a great deal of literature that really gives us any insight. There are numerous attempts to try to provide some insight into the life of the Pinchas Karetza, but most of them are really not very adequate. Reb Pinchas Karetzer came from the family whose name was Shapiro, and the name itself derives from the fact that the family originally hailed from the city of Speyer, which I guess is what in English? Spires? No. Spires? Is this a city? Spires.
What is it?
Spires.
Spire.
Spire?
That's
where is it?
I believe it's in France. Also
Rabbi Anton believes it's in France. His ancestors were amongst those who were martyred in during the Crusades, were an inspiration to the to their community, and it was a family of Talmudic aristocracy, a family of scholars and leaders of communities, of which this Reb Pinchas was throughout the course of his life was deeply proud. Reb Pinchas Karetzer was born somewhere about the year of 1725, 1726, depending on which biography one reads, in Lithuania, in the city of Shklov. His father, Rabbi Avrom Abba, was amongst those who originally considered themselves amongst the firm Misnagdim of the Baal Shem Tov and his new movement. There are a number of different accounts as to how exactly the Pinchas Karetz and his father became Mekurevim, were drawn to the Baal Shem Tov. One of the accounts revolves around the fact that on a given Shabbos, that Reb Pinchas and his father ended up in a community where the Baal Shem Tov had come to spend Shabbos. During the course of Shalashudas, the father, who was sitting at an adjoining table to the one where the Baal Shem Tov was holding forth, rose to stand immediately opposite the Baal Shem Tov as the Baal Shem began his Shalashudas Torah. And Reb Pinchas, who saw this, became very apprehensive. He knew that his father was an outspoken foe of the Baal Shem Tov, and he knew that his father was an individual who did not brook any nonsense, and that if there was any opportunity, that he would be all over the Baal Shem Tov. And the Rabbi Avraham Abba stood directly opposite the Baal Shem Tov, staring intently at him, and then he went back to his seat without having said anything. A short time later, the Baal Shem HaKodesh indicated that he wanted to give another another commentary on the Sedra, and began by saying, I am going to give this commentary because it has already been repeated in my name in the heavenly spheres. Once again, Rabbi Avraham Abba rose, stood directly opposite the Baal Shem Tov, and stared intently upon the Baal Shem Tov throughout the course of this his drasha. When the Baal Shem Tov concluded, the Rabbi Avraham Abba exclaimed in ecstatic tones, "It is he! It was this and none other." And when he sat down, his son said to him, "What did that mean?" He said that the previous night, on Friday night, that when he fell asleep, that he had a dream, and in the dream, he heard in the Celestial Academy a commentary on the Sedra, which when it was concluded, concluded by saying, "This is the drasha of Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov." So he said he knew that he had to come and see whether or not, in fact, there was any truth at all to this dream. And when the Baal Shem Tov began his second drasha by saying that he has to say this Torah because it has already been repeated in his name in the heavenly spheres, he was riveted, and the Torah was exactly as he heard it. And he said, anybody in whose Torah is that venerated, that it is repeated in his name in the heavenly academy, is someone that he needs to be connected to. And Rabbi Avraham Abba became, from that point forward, an ardent supporter of the Baal Shem HaKodesh. Despite the fact that both Rabbi Avraham Abba and his son Reb Pinchas became very respectful of the Baal Shem Tov, Reb Pinchas remained much of an enigma. The Baal Shem Tov was an individual who inspired either profound commitment, people who became his devoted followers, and who gave themselves entirely over to his leadership and his counsel, or they became bitter opponents of his way. The Baal Shem Tov did not allow, he was not the kind of individual who allowed for any kind of middle of the road. It just wasn't that kind of a phenomenon. The Pinchas was an individual who, curiously enough, managed to occupy something of an exception to that rule. He was certainly not opposed to the Baal Shem Tov, although in certain instances his derech, his way, took exception to that of the Baal Shem Tov. At the same time, he was not completely subordinate to the Baal Shem HaKodesh. He was deeply influenced by the Baal Shem Tov. He was extremely respectful of the Baal Shem Tov. But he, unlike virtually everyone else, did not completely submit. And he remained someone who supported the Baal Shem and his derech, but not someone who could, in the classic sense, be considered a full chassid or a disciple of the Baal Shem HaKadosh. The Reb Pinchas began his rabbinical leadership in the city of Koretz, where he served for some 20 years. He then moved over very briefly to Slavita, and after Slavita ended up in the city of Ostra. Um, he left Astra in somewhere about the year 1790 or 91 to fulfill a dream of his to settle in Eretz Yisrael. He got as far as Shepetivka, and in Shepetivka he took ill, and on the 10th day of Elul, Reb Pinchas passed away in the city of Shepetivka. The Reb Pinchas's Reb Pinchas's derech, his modality of service was one which departed from the classic Baal Shem Chassidus in a number of ways. First of all, the Baal Shem Tov, you will remember, began a reference to tshuva which no longer made rigorous demands on people to deprive or deny themselves, to punish themselves, to suffer in one form or another, some form of sigufim or yisurim, self-invoked kinds of different forms of self-flagellation. The Baal Shem urged people not to resort to fasting, not to resort to some of the other forms of tshuva, of penitence, which had been in vogue amongst chassidim and shemais, against people who were aspirants to greater levels of holiness. The Baal Shem campaigned against it. He felt that that the generation was no longer able to tolerate it, and that it led to some very serious deficits in avoda. And so he counseled in an entirely different direction. Reb Pinchas remained a fairly firm advocate of fasting and these different forms of self-denial. Reb Pinchas also was somewhat critical of the times in which people, while he too advocated an adherence to joy as a an expression and as an orientation of mood, he was critical of the fact that there were times when one stepped over the line, and it goes from joy to frivolity or levity. And so he was a much more severe kind of an individual. Of all of the many pursuits in Aveda which Reb Pinchas had, probably the two which stand out most explicitly are his passion for truth and his avoda in tefillah. From his earliest times, he grew up in the Lithuanian tradition. He became a great follower of the Rambam, most especially in the Meira Nevechim. The Chassidim used to say that Reb Pinchas Karatza became a Chassid from his study of the Meir Nevi'im. On one occasion, his son loaned the Sefer Meir Nevi'im to someone who had asked for it, and when Reb Pinchas discovered that the Meir Nevi'im was missing from the house, he admonished his son in that just having the Meir Nevi'im in one's house was something that inspired an individual with Yirah Shemayim, with the fear of heaven. Now, you have to know that the Meir Nevi'im was an embattled sefer. It's it's Maimonides' guide to the perplexed. It's a very complex sefer. It's a highly philosophic commentary in many ways on the entirety of Torah, and many argue that it was not intended for those people who are devout believers. It was something that that Maimonides had authored in order to combat all of the destructive philosophies of his time, and as such it really wasn't intended as a mainstream sefer for those people who had grown up within a strong tradition. But out of his upbringing in that tradition, Reb Pinchas developed an attachment to truth which became a consuming pursuit, a consuming passion in his life. He remarked on one occasion that he spent 13 years toiling in the most back-breaking way in order to be able to identify falsehood and to be able to reject it. He said, 13 years of painful toil in order to be able to overcome falsehood. He then remarked that he spent another 13 years of equally exacting, equally demanding toil in order to learn how to speak the truth. He once compared himself with his colleague, the Tildes, who we had discussed last week or 2 weeks ago, or both. He said, the Tildes, he said, speaks a great deal of truth. And he is not afraid that at times there may be some things that he says in this great volume of truth which don't measure up to the highest levels of exactitude which to which the Tildes generally is devoted. So he said, but he has such a love for truth that he speaks the truth in great volumes, in great quantity. He says, I, on the other hand, he says, have a great aversion to falsehood. And consequently, he said, you will find very little that I write or say because I am extremely anxious about the fact that I may say something or may write something which doesn't match up to the totality of truth to which I am committed. And so there is very little, in fact, which remains in written form from Reb Pinchas Karatzin. Some of his disciples in Talmidim, his students, have recorded some of his Teiras, and they have found their way into a number of small volumes, the most notable of which is called Medrash Pinchas, which has been is reprinted a number of times. But they are fairly brief kinds of commentaries and reflect the fact that the disciples were repeating something that had been delivered in very concise and very terse form. His Avodas HaTfilah, his service in prayer, was something which was referred to in Hasidic literature in terms of great deference and reverence. His complete focus and concentration was so awesome that when he did finish davening, that he couldn't speak or be spoken to for quite some time after he had finished davening. He generally stood without movement, and many felt that he was spiritually no longer in touch with his body, his physical being, other than in the most tangential way. That he fulfilled the ideal of tefillah being hispashtus hagashmi, someone who rises to stand before the divine throne in such a way that there is barely the slightest trace of physicality left in his person. A number of interesting stories remain about Reb Pinchas and about some of Reb Pinchas's descendants. What? No. One story which should be of interest to some of our balabustas here is a commentary that he made on the Rashi, which tells us what the pasuk means when it says that Yitzchak brought Rivka into his tent, and behold, it was his mother Sarah. Have a chumash over there. Let me just make sure that I quote this correctly. Any chumash will do. Okay. So it says as follows: Vayivyeha Yitzchak ha'ehela Sarah imay, and Yitzchak brought her into the tent of his mother Sarah. So Rashi says, Vayivyeha ha'ehela, he brought her into the tent. Vaharehi Sarah imay, and behold, she was his mother Sarah. Or more correctly, as Rashi continues, Kalema Venasi's Dugma Sarima, that she was the she was a perfect what? Perfect image, a perfect reflection of his mother Sarah. And Rashi goes on to say that as long as Sarah was alive, that there was a flame which burned from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, that Bracha Metzuya B'Isa, that there was a blessing that was present in the bread dough, and that the divine presence was always hovering above her tent. And when she died, these blessings disappeared, and when Rivka came, they were restored. So Reb Pinchas commented on this bracha metzuya b'isa, that the dough was, there was a blessing in the dough, which we tend to believe that there was just a little bit of dough, and somehow when she made it, it prospered, expanded because of the majesty of her person. And he said as follows. He said, Avram was a very well-to-do person, and he certainly had enough flour so that Sarah did not have to work with a little bit of flour, such as to have to appeal to a blessing to come in and expand the little bit and make a great deal of it. He said, here is the principle. He said, if a woman kneads the dough and prepares bread, and she is not in a good frame of mind, if she is tense and upset and angry or what have you, the bread will reflect it. It will be missing a certain beauty, a certain richness, a certain Messias Chain. He said, if a woman prepares the dough and does it with joy, with a sense of presiding over something which is sacred, the entire physical and spiritual qualities of this dough change in such a way that when you look at it, when you taste it, there is a bracha. It's blessed. It looks blessed. It tastes blessed. And he says the greatness of Sarah was that despite the fact that there were many demands upon her time, and there was no question about the fact that there were probably she was frequently taxed to the utmost, nonetheless, there was bracha metzuya b'isa. She prepared her dough in such a way that there was always a blessing present in the dough. The moral of the story is, don't bake when you're upset. Or something like that. There's a story about a fellow from Danzig who was already amongst the Maskilim. He was amongst one of the religiously liberated Jews who was persuaded to come to the holy Reb Pinchas to request his blessing for a very serious tragedy that occurred in his family. His daughter was suddenly struck with blindness. And he came into Reb Pinchas, and Reb Pinchas said to him, the reason that this occurred is because this is hereditary. He said, it goes over from generation to generation. The girl's father is blind, so she is blind. So the man said, Rabbi, my eyesight is perfect, and I don't even need glasses. So the Rebbe said to him, there are many kinds of blindness. He said, and the specific kind of blindness that I'm referring to is the one in which you refuse to address the truth. He said, if you want your daughter to recover, he said, I assure you, I guarantee it, that if you go back home and you restore the way of our ancestors, the traditions of your forefathers to your home, that your daughter's eyesight will be restored. And with that guarantee, he returned home to follow the Rebbe's instructions, and his daughter's eyesight returned as suddenly as it had disappeared. There's one anecdote which relates that when the Baal Shem Tov was in during the last days of his life, that some of his Hasidim came to him to ask of him what they should do after he's gone. Where will they find someone who will serve as their mentor? They felt unable to continue without someone who would lead them, and would he direct them? So the Baal Shem Tov said, you know who the leaders of our generation are. He said, go to each one of these people and ask them if there is any advice or counsel that they can give you on the issue of arrogance, on the battle that we have with arrogance. He said, the individual who will tell you that he has that he has some advice for you is not the person who can be your leader, can be your mentor. After the Baal Shem HaKadosh passed away, these disciples who had solicited this advice began to go to the different luminaries of the time, and on each occasion they'd be very impressed with the things that they said, but then they would go in to spend some private time with this particular individual, and they would ask the Baal Shem's question, can you tell us what to do about arrogance? And invariably they all gave one or another kind of counsel, and the minute that happened, the Hasidim knew that this wasn't for them. They finally arrived in Koretz, they went into the Pinchas, and they presented this question to Reb Pinchas, and Reb Pinchas began to cry, and he said, I wish I could help you. I have nothing at all to tell you. He said, I've been engaged in fighting this battle, he said, for so many, many years. He says, and I still have not come up with anything which is helpful. All of this despite the fact that one of the very famous quotes which is attributed to Reb Pinchas is an expression of gratitude that the Almighty did not make arrogance or haughtiness a mitzvah. He said, anivus is described in the Torah as a great virtue. Humility is described in the Torah as something which is a great value. But haughtiness is pretty roundly criticized and condemned. So he says, I don't know, he says, what I would have done had the Almighty made arrogance something to aspire to, something to try to acquire for oneself, he said, because I can't find anything about which to feel arrogant about. Nonetheless, his response to the questions of the Chassidim were that this was a lifelong battle of his, and they became then disciples of Reb Pinchas. Reb Pinchas while he lived a fairly isolated life, That is, that he had his number of disciples, but he was a person who generally did not draw or seek to attract a great many followers. He was someone who was a very diligent Talmudic scholar, very diligent worshipful person, so that that he really cherished the time that he had alone. Invited at times certain criticisms for his kind of traveling alone. One of the more famous stories, one which has been reprinted in a number of different ways, is one which I heard a number of times repeated from my father-in-law, Zecher Mivrach. My father-in-law used to tell that the Ban Chernobylach, the Bechor, the oldest son of the Chernobyl Magid, one of the eight giants of the original family of Chernobyl, that Rebbe on one occasion, after the morning davening, began to relate certain anecdotes from the Gedolei HaChassidus, the luminaries of Chassidus. And an entire crowd of Chassidim gathered about, standing all the while, listening to the Rebbe tell story after story. And many hours passed, and they all stood in rapt attention. Finally, someone looked up and commented that it was well past the noon hour, and all of this time had passed and no one had any sense that time had passed. So one of the Chassidim standing there exclaimed to the Rebbe, "Rebbe, the Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to heaven for 40 days and 40 nights, and that during this period of time he neither ate nor drank. And we've always kind of looked at that as being something that's really extraordinary." He says, "But Rebbe, we've just spent over here hours listening to you tell stories. And if the Rebbe would continue to tell stories, we could probably go without food or drink for the longest time. And imagine, therefore, that it's not a great accomplishment if Moshe was up in heaven for 40 days and 40 nights if you're under the tutelage of the Almighty himself. Time means nothing." So the Rebbe said to this Chassid, he said, "That's how you understand what the Torah is telling us, that the Torah is trying to praise Moshe Rabbeinu, that he didn't have to eat and he didn't have to drink." He said, "There's another perspective on that." And he said, "Let me explain it to you with a story." So the Baruch Chernobler proceeded to tell the following story. The Zlotcheva Magid, one of my Rebbetzin's ancestors, had a reputation which was almost without peer amongst the Talmidei HaBaal Shem Tov. He was a person of staggering greatness. And on one occasion he fell ill. And as his condition worsened, his children, he had five sons, all of whom were themselves recognized as giants in the Hasidic world afterwards, his sons began to discuss amongst themselves how they might in some way affect the course of this illness. And one of them said, "I think that we should send an emissary to Reb Pinchas Karetzer, and we should ask him to pray for father, or to give a special bracha to father, to intervene on his behalf. So one of the other children remarked, you know that over the last period of time, there has been a parting of the ways between father and Reb Pinchas. He seems to be very upset with him. So he said, I don't think it would be advisable that we should go to Reb Pinchas because father seems to be too irritated. So the conversation continued until they finally agreed that there was no recourse, that they had to send somebody to Reb Pinchas. Reb Pinchas was probably one of the only people in the generation who could change the course of this illness. And so Reb Mordechai Kremenitz assumed responsibility for making this trip. He waited until his father fell asleep and immediately set out in great haste to try to get to Koritz and get back, perhaps without his father discerning his absence. So he makes the trip, and no sooner does he walk through the door, and Reb Pinchas goes to greet him and said, I understand your father is ill. He said, and let me explain to you why. He said, recently your father took some sort of made some sort of a Kabbalah, that is, he took upon himself not to eat any dairy products. So some form of his removing himself from the pleasures of the world. So he said, when a righteous person partakes of this world, then all of this very materialistic world, this very physical world, is sublimated, it is elevated, because it becomes part of the being of the tzaddik, and as such, when the righteous person, when the tzaddik serves Hashem, when he serves the Almighty, the energy from whatever it is that has been incorporated in the person of the tzaddik is placed on the altar on high. So he said, after your father took this very disciplined course to remove himself from all dairy products, he said, the dairy products of the world came before the divine throne to complain about the great wrong that your father had committed against them. So he said, go back home, persuade your father that he should remand his Kabbalah, that he should remand his this very severe course, and he will rapidly recover. So Reb Mordechai was very, very overjoyed to get this information, was about to leave when Reb Pinchas said to him, and one more thing. He said, I know your father is upset with me. He said, it used to be that during the course of our respective service of Hashem, that we would find each other in the heavenly spheres. He says, and recently he has not seen me. And so he is upset with me. Tell him that Pinchas has found his own personal way, and that it is a way which is so sublime that he cannot see me. And with that, he dismissed Reb Mordechai. Reb Mordechai hurriedly made the trip back. No sooner did he step into the room than his father woke up and said, I understand you've been to Koritz. So he said, what did Reb Pinchas say? So Reb Mordechai became somewhat worried that he was going to get chewed out over here. So he said, he repeated what Reb Pinchas had said, And the Zlotchev HaMagid said he is correct. He says, I did in fact make such a Kabbalah. And he ordered that a Beis Din would gather so he could renounce this this commitment. So he said to him, and what else did Reb Pinchas tell you? So he repeated the last part. At which point, the Zlotchev HaMagid became very, very upset. He said he has found his own way. And he kept on saying he's found his own way. And as he was agitated, he opened up a Gemara that was lying before him. It was a Gemara Sanhedrin. And he opened it up to a page, which coincidentally enough has some bearing on this week's Sedra and Pinchas. And the Gemara was commenting on a pasuk, Vayamid Pinchas Vayefaleo. And Pinchas arose. The word Vayefaleo is a very complex word. It means, and he judged, some saying he praised. In any event, the Gemara's comment, Sha'osa Plilaisim Kainai, which implied to the Zlotchev HaMagid that Pinchas, in this case it was the Pinchas Koretz, or rather than the biblical Pinchas, that Pinchas somehow had the right to make his own way. And so, with great respect and deference, he renewed his lifelong friendship with Reb Pinchas, and the Zlotchev HaMagid, as Reb Pinchas had predicted, recovered from his illness. One of the So Reb Aaron Chernobyler concluded having concluded the story, said to the Chassidim, he said, the Torah over here is not trying to tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't eat or didn't drink. He said that, as you've already observed, is no great achievement when a person is in the presence of the Almighty. He said the Torah is trying to tell us that there was some disappointment over here. There was some hurt involved in this. Because whenever Moshe Rabbeinu would eat or drink, the physical world was elevated to a very lofty and exalted summit. It was placed on a heavenly altar. For 40 days and 40 nights, food and drink were denied this heavenly ladder to be elevated through Moshe Rabbeinu to the divine throne. So the Torah is really kind of recording this, not as a big deal in terms of a great achievement on the part of Moshe, but more of a lament for 40 days and 40 nights. Bread and water did not make its way to the throne. Reb Pinchas had a son, Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe was a very talented, a very gifted person. He was a person who was a Talmud Chacham, and he was a tzaddik and a chassid. But in addition to that, he was also extremely gifted artistically, and he became a scribe, and through his scribal arts became active in the in printing, and he devised his own press and began to print Sforim in the city of Slavita, which were incomparable in their beauty and were sought after by the entire Hasidic world and people who treasured not only beautifully crafted things, but the kinds of things that were produced by people of that kind of stature, and there were other legends that surrounded the printing of Slavita. When Reb Moshe, in the course of the developing this printing business, became a very, very affluent person. He turned over the printing business to his two sons, one of whom was named for his father, Reb Pinchas, and another one who was named, I think Reb Avraham Abba was his name, after Reb Pinchas' father. By the way, just as a digression, today, if you find something printed in Slavita, it will bring some very handsome prices. If you find a sefer printed in Slavita, sometimes in some of the synagogues in the little towns where they've kind of gone out of business, if you go through the libraries, you can come upon some magnificent finds. They printed a shas, and a Slavita shas is today worth tens of thousands of dollars. In any event, he turned over the printing business to his two sons. There was an incident. First of all, we have to know that while all of this was going on, there was a simultaneous printing of the Talmud of the Shas going on in Vilna. These parallel prints, at the time with a fairly limited audience, consumers, evoked considerable heat. And the Misnagdim, who had it in for the Chassidim generally, found this printing of the Shas to be an opportunity to keep the fires of dissent and strife burning very, very intensely. During the course of all of this strife, a fellow who was working for the printing press in Slavita for the Pinchas' grandsons, a man by the name of Eliezer. This Eliezer, as the different accounts go, this Eliezer was given he was an alcoholic. He was very offensive and brutal to his wife. This Eliezer's wife, worked for the Slavita brothers, as did Eliezer himself. Eliezer was one of the people who worked in the printing business. She would constantly run with her complaints to either the Pinchas or the Avraham Abba, and they would call him in and they would scold him, which only irritated him more, so that he would go back and he would abuse his wife even more. And finally, they became so fed up with him that they dismissed him. This Eliezer apparently, during one of his drunken stupors, tripped, fell, did something, and perhaps he was up to mischief, but he ended up striking himself hard enough so that he died. And so some of the workers found him in the in having died of this accident, and whether they were trying to hide him, whatever, they took him off, and his body was discovered. A fellow by the name of Reb Shimshon Finkelman, who was one of the great opposers of the Karatzer press, he was a Masnagit, went to the authorities and reported the fact that this Eliezer, because he worked in the printing press, in the this printing establishment, was aware of the fact that the Karatzer brothers, the Shapiros, were printing anti-government kinds of revolutionary literature, and that Eliezer had found out about it and was going to report it, and so they executed him, that the brothers had him executed. The government immediately designated an investigator to find out, and it was a high-ranking individual whose name escapes me at the moment. And the brothers, because they were very afraid of all of the anti-Semitism, felt that the best way of bringing this whole thing to a very quick close was to try to offer this investigator a very handsome sum of money to bring this frivolous investigation to a very quick close. Whether it was because he was a rabid anti-Semite, whatever the reason was, he took the money, turned it over to his superiors as a confirmation of their guilt, and the brothers were sentenced to receive 1,500 strokes in a gauntlet, a punishment which virtually no one ever survived, and if they were to survive, that they were then to be banished to Siberia. These two long lines of soldiers with their whatever those
whips.
What?
Whips.
Not whips. They were clubs. With clubs stood on either side, and the two brothers went through this gauntlet. Most people didn't even make it to the middle of the tunnel. And there are all kinds of interesting legends surrounding their fate in this gauntlet. But they did survive, although they were mutilated. The story goes that one of the sons, I don't remember which one, during the course of going through the clubbing, his yarmulke, his kippah, fell off. It was smitten off, and he went back to retrieve it because he didn't want to walk any further without it, which just meant that he received twice as many blows because they struck him on the way back and once again on the way going. Miraculously and wondrously, they survived this very brutal punishment, and they were then to suffer the final chapter, which was to be sent to Siberia. They got as far as Moscow. They could not travel any further because of their weakness, And they remained there for a period of time until I believe the Tsar died, and the incoming Tsar pardoned them and sent them back home, but not before they had been so mutilated and maimed by this experience. The story is that one of their wives came to Moscow to visit them, and when she saw what had transpired to her husband, she collapsed and died. That's what a grotesque product her husband had become. When they were freed, they returned to Slavita, national heroes, and from that point forward, they each had an impressive following who became Hasidim of these of Reb Pinchas and Reb Avraham Abba. That's part one of the story. Part two of the story goes as follows. One of the Hasidic greats was someone who was called the Shpola Zayda. It was a city Shpola. And it was known to be a city of people who were very ignorant. And this Shpola Zayda came to Shpola and transformed the community. He taught them, he inspired them. And according to one account, the reason that he was called Shpola Zayda is because his work was so classically the work of the Zayda, the grandfather of Avram, who sought to reach out and embrace people and bring them closer to the service of God. They called him Shpola Zayda. He was called the Zayda. The Shpola Zayda had a chassid who was a very prosperous businessman, someone of whom he was very fond and who was a very devoted follower of the Shpola Zayda. This chassid, who in every other which regard was very fortunate, was very unfortunate in one regard, in that he and his wife had not been blessed with any children. The second part of the story, by the way, that I'm relating to you right now, is a story which the Rizhinov, the great founder of the Rizhinov dynasty, that the Rizhinov once related this story. So he said that this chassid used to come to the Shpola Zayda, constantly petitioning that the Rebbe should intervene on his behalf, that he would be blessed with children. And the Rebbe would constantly put him off. In one instance, he came to the Rebbe, resolved that he would be put off no longer. He came to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe, on this occasion, was doing something which was of supreme importance in a very global scale, and he was clearly not very much in touch with this world. And this guy came and said to the Rebbe, "Rebbe, you gotta give me a bracha that I'm gonna have children." And the Rebbe said to him, the Rebbe was fond of him, he said to him, "Look, I care a great deal about you, but I'm really involved now in a matter which is of global importance." He said, "You must allow me now to do what I need to do. Please don't disturb me now. I'll talk to you later." And this guy, who was very invested in the fact that this is the only way he was going to get it, "Oh, the Rebbe's involved in some global thing. He's talking to the Almighty. Now this is the time." So he said, "No, Rebbe, right now, you're not going to get away from me right now. You have to promise me that I'm going to have children." He said to him, "This is not now a time in which I can deal with individuals. I'm dealing with a matter which involves Klal Yisrael. It involves the fate of all Jews. Please leave me. This guy, as much as the Shpala Zedah put him off, redoubled his efforts, made himself more and more of a nuisance, much to the growing consternation of the Shpala Zedah, and he pleaded with him over and over again that he should please postpone this whole discussion for a later time. And this fellow only became more insistent until finally the Shpala Zedah said to him, "Okay, I promise you, I swear to you, you will not have any children." Well, the result was the precise opposite of what he had been working for, and he knew that this was it. So, humiliated, he left Shpala, knowing that the likelihood of his ever having any children was, as much as it was dismal before, was now virtually non-existent. And from that point forward, being a merchant, he traveled a great deal, and being affluent, he had the wherewithal to do so. He tried to see if there was any way in which he might somehow nullify this terrible decree which the Shpala Zedah had inveighed against him. And as fate would have it, he came to the community where Reb Pinchas lived. I believe it was in Karetz at the time. And at the time, Reb Pinchas was destitute, doing virtually nothing else other than the study of Torah and the worship of the Almighty, and was very removed from the necessity to have to deal with such things as providing food for his home. This chassid, who was had spent enough time in Shpala to recognize a person of greatness when he saw him, immediately discerned when he came into the Beis Medrash that this young man who was sitting in the corner of the Beis Medrash was not just another Talmud Chacham, not just another Torah scholar, but this was a person of great stature. And so he waited until there was a moment, and he began to speak to Reb Pinchas, and everything that transpired from that point forward only deepened his conviction that this was a person that might be the answer to his prayers. And from that point forward, he began to see to it that whenever he would be anywhere in the immediate vicinity, that he would find his way to Karetz to spend some time. And on one of those trips, it was Erev Pesach. And he came in to the Rebbetzin, and he said to her, "Do you have any provisions at all for Pesach?" And she said to him, "I don't have a penny in the house. There is neither matzah, nor wine, nor candles. There is nothing. And it's we're only a few days before Pesach, and there is no prospect at all of my being able to provide for Pesach." So he said to her, "Look, I have a proposal to make to you. I'm a very prosperous person. I will buy everything that you need. I only ask for one favor. I want to be at the Seder. I want to be present at the Seder." She said to him, "Not having anything, I can't invite you, but if there will be, certainly would be our pleasure." So he said to her, "Please do me a favor, don't tell your husband. I want to surprise him." And so the Pinchas went off Erev Pesach in the morning, knowing that there was nothing in the house, that there wasn't even a matzah for him to fulfill the mitzvah. The moment that he left the house, this merchant and the Rebbetzin went into high gear. New furniture was brought into the house. The tables were covered with tablecloths of the finest linen. All kinds of delicacies for Pesach were prepared, and there were shmugamats, and there were different kinds of wines and candles, and there were new clothes for everybody in the house, and a resplendent new chalat for the rabbi. After the davening, the Rebbe knew he had nothing to come home to. Zechariah Pinchas stayed longer. He finally came home, walked into the house, and it's set for royalty. He had no idea where all of this came from, but he was anxious to sit down to the Seder. He said nothing. Finally, they sat down to Shulchan Aruch, sat down to the meal, and he turned to his guest and he said, where does all this come from? She said, this gentleman wanted to spend Pesach with us and he provided all of this. The Pinchas was in a state of such ecstasy, and that he was able to have the kind of Seder that he did, that he turned to him and he said to him, is there anything at all that I can do for you? At which point this fellow broke down and told him the whole story. Told him how he had been a chassid, a very devoted follower of the Shpala Zayda, and how he had bothered him when he shouldn't, and how the Shpala Zayda pleaded with him not to bother him, and he continued to disturb him, and how finally Shpala Zayda swore to him that he would not have any children. And he said, I can't bear this decree. He said, Rebbe, help me. So the Pinchas, who was soaring on the joy of the Seder, said, if I have any zechus, if I have any merit in heaven, then it is my oath that this year you will be blessed with a son. The Rishon said that the moment that the Pinchas took that very, very strong position, that there was a tremendous conflict in the heavenly spheres, because they now had two decrees. There was the word of the Shpala Zayda, who had sworn to him that he was not to have any children, and there was the word of the great Reb Pinchas Karatzer, who had assured him that he would. And the heavenly tribunal began to wrestle with how this problem was to be resolved. They finally concluded that they were going to examine the chronicles of each of their lives, that is, the chronicles of the life of Reb Pinchas and the chronicles of the life of the Shpala Zayda, and whoever amongst them, if it should be the case, that none of them had ever taken any kind of, or never made, okay, we're constantly making assurances, I'm going to do it, I promise, I'll do it. That if one of them had been so cautious as never to utter anything that would take the form of a promise, that the heavenly verdict would defer to whoever it was that had never promised anything before. And when they examined the records, they found that Reb Pinchas was a person who had been so circumspect, so cautious with his speech, that he had never ever made any kind of statement that could have appeared to be an assurance or a promise without qualifying it, that it was not to be so understood. And with that, the verdict from heaven was that this person would be blessed with a child as Reb Pinchas had decreed. And that year, this chassid was in fact blessed with a son. And the greatness of Reb Pinchas, whose discipline in speech had led to this became yet another very brilliant part of Hasidic history. The Rishonah, when he told this story, concluded the story in the following way. He said, despite the fact that Reb Pinchas gave a decree which was which took the upper hand, one ought to learn a lesson that one does not attempt to contravene the word of another tzaddik. He said, this chassid's grandson was the individual who went to the authorities to report, to malign the Pinchas's grandchildren, that they were guilty in this conspiratorial plot. So the Pinchas, who was himself responsible for the very fact that this fellow was alive altogether, because he took a position against another tzaddik, this ultimately did not lead to the most propitious ending, to the most desirable ending. Reb Pinchas Karatzar left behind a legacy of sanctity, of a passionate pursuit of truth, of chassidus, and his children and children's children remained a very formidable Hasidic force in Jewish history. The family name was Rabinowitz. My father's mother was a direct descendant of Reb Pinchas. My brother Matel has the Kiddush cup which Reb Pinchas used. So we're holding on to a very tiny little portion of this legacy. My children have the very distinct pleasure of being descendants through my side from Reb Pinchas and from their mother's side from the Zlotch of a Magid. And you'll remember the story that I told you earlier about the this period of time in which the Zlotch of a Magid and Reb Pinchas were on difficult and kind of at odds with one another. Which might explain the reason that sometimes my children are at odds with themselves. I don't know. What are we going to do next week? Let's surprise ourselves and find out who we're going to talk about next week.
In 2 weeks is a Tisha B'Av.